It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
See, and that's why, after converting to Islam, he changed his name completely. It's not even close. And that's why there's a whole generation, including me, who has only known him as Billy Ray Cyrus. Like, I only found out the rest in recent years.
Well, I didn't know any of that.
See? Yeah.
Well, I guess based on his name, you kind of should have guessed.
No, like I said, yeah, it was specifically because of his newfound belief structure, yeah. So that's weird.
What are you doing, Gus? What is it? What
Trish has a new theory about why Addie is quite so obsessed when you're here. And she may be right. Addie might kind of think that's his chair.
He's never in it when I get here.
No. Because he doesn't spend that... I mean, compared to other places, he doesn't spend that much time there. But he seems to be possessive of it. If it's empty and, like, Trish puts something there, he gets mad. And it is not uncommon to see him napping there at times. So, she thinks that may be contributing to it. I don't know. Otherwise, it's just that you smell so different, I'm guessing. Do you notice anything different about Addie?
No.
He doesn't have no balls. But otherwise, yeah, there's no difference, because he's still a freak. He has not calmed down at all. In fact, when he first came back, he was slightly crazier. So,
I kind of
this weekend we're going to cook
him up. Suspected that might happen. Because I realize, you know, that's the common belief, and not an uncommon experience for, you know, especially a male animal is castrated for their behavior to change, but I don't think that's always the case.
Well, and especially not so freaking fast.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he gets better all the time. It's hard to tell, but he really does. And he's learning, and he's still growing up and stuff, so.
Okay.
They still really like him at the vet. Apparently, he's very good. He's surprisingly good with people he doesn't know. Like, he's not freaking... Like, he's less scared of you than the other two, and the other two have known you for years.
Well, some cats are just... Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just cool
like
with
that
it,
with,
yeah.
With people, they're like that with other animals.
Twiggle's a little bit like that, but yeah. This is more indicative of Tigger, and Tigger... Who wanted to make friends with anything? Tigger tried to make friends with a giant dog one time. It did not go well. Tigger also tried to make friends with the vacuum. That did not go well. He would make friends with anything. He doesn't do that to other people's feet. Like, I don't even... And there is other leather in the house, too. Like, I don't know what the magic is there, but he really likes your foot. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that unites people of every nation, every race, every religion, creed, anything, to come together and say, I feel like we could do better than this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm Tony.
And I'm William. And this is episode 286.
Let's just jump right in here. Let me explain this to you for people who don't know, because sometimes otherwise I forget. So, we have a hat. It's magic in that... I even know where it is this time. In that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people, mostly people who listen to the show, it'd be a little weird for others, although it's happened. Write in to that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And write little notes, comments, questions, topics, things like that. To to that email address. Yeah, you're looking at Ezzy. Ezzy, she doesn't know where he is. Ah!
She's freaked out by that case.
That is weird. Why is she freaked out?
Because it was slowly opening.
Oh, okay. She still doesn't like him, but she's much more used to him. Well, you'll note right then, she jumped and she wasn't happy about it, but she didn't, like, hiss at him or anything. Yeah. Anyway, the hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. It's ecstatically watching cats try and socialize servants. Yeah, I've really lost the thread on those. Draw those cards out of the hat at random. Read them on the air. Talk about them till we're bored. Do that for about an hour. That's the whole show. So that's about it.
That's about it.
Yeah. We were just commenting on how crazy the parking is tonight outside.
Now, I'm a little worried about my car. I don't really like it blocking the sidewalk. Yeah. Because I don't, like, you know, if people are often walking by and some people have strollers and stuff, and so what are they going to do?
Maybe that's what the lady who was talking on her cell phone was doing. She was telling the cops on you right now.
Yeah. I mean, that's, obviously, I don't want to be a problem.
But I also don't want them running into
my car with their strollers or whatever, which I could barely blame them for doing if they have to, like, you know, walk around. I don't know. I don't like it, but I don't know what else to do because there's literally no place.
Nothing for blocks away because, yeah, something must be going on at the school or at Mercer, I suppose.
And I was late the way it was because traffic here was really awful, which it hardly ever is like that.
Yeah, that is weird. I don't know. We forgot about Mercer, though. It definitely could be something at Mercer, not at the school, necessarily.
Mercer?
Mercer. It's a community center over there. Oh. Pretty big one. It's our polling place.
Okay.
So, how was your week?
It was good. Just working on projects and stuff. Usual thing. Nothing really to talk about. We got on DVD, Netflix. We got, well, I don't think it's going to be interesting, but I'll try to talk about it anyway. We got The Good Wife.
Oh, with Juliana Margulies and Christine Baranski and Alan Cummings. Yeah.
It's not bad. It's pretty good so far.
It seemed good. I have such a hard time when you've gone past a certain number of seasons. I'm like, I don't know if I want to get into that, which is why, at this point, I will probably never watch Supernatural. Just because they won't stop. I believe they're on 11.
It's too bad, because I think you'd like the first six seasons.
I really feel like I would like it, too, but I'm like, this is too ridiculous now. I usually have this issue with books, not with TV shows, but they're getting kind of out of control.
Well, I'm kind of surprised we're doing this, considering the fall TV season is going to start just in a few weeks. And when it does, I can't believe how many TV shows we're watching. I mean,
at least for us, we will drop off a lot of them real fast.
Well, these are shows that we've been watching.
Oh, these are just recurring seasons. Okay.
There are some new ones that we want to watch.
And you haven't got the DVR situation.
We're going to try Van Helsing.
I haven't decided if I'm going to try Van Helsing. I'm really torn about that. But it's probably worth a pilot.
I think there were like four or five new shows that we were going to try to watch.
I don't know how it happened. It kind of snuck up on us. But Killjoy's second season started. Mm-hmm. And then we kind of couldn't watch it, I think, because we were traveling and stuff like that. And then just recently we've kind of binged it a little bit. And I'm really shocked because we have two episodes on there. And then apparently tomorrow night is the season finale already. Mm. And I'm like, we just started watching this. I think Trish is a little lukewarm on that. I'm still digging it. I love Killjoys. Mm. Stranger Things officially got a second season. Yeah. So, woohoo.
Oh, we tried Quantico.
Oh.
We just thought, because here's the thing. We ended up liking Scandal okay. I mean, I talked about all the problems we had with it.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it was actually pretty good. But the way it's marketed and the way we saw How to Get Away with Murder before we ever saw any advertisements or anything for it, and we liked it. But we noticed it's advertised the same way. If you just judge Scandal and How to Get Away with Murder and a few other shows by how their ads run. I mean, there's no way we'd watch those shows because they totally don't. They totally gloss over what we would enjoy in a show like that, and they go right for the stuff that we don't like to promote the show.
Movies, of course, are the really bad ones. Of that. Yeah.
So we thought, well, maybe Quantico's like that because every time we see an ad for it, it looks so dumb.
Yeah.
And kind of as we expected, it wasn't just totally stupid. It was actually okay, but it wasn't that good. I mean, in the end, so we stopped watching it. But it wasn't bad in the way we would expect it to be bad based on the ads, if that makes any sense.
I don't know.
I think some people would really like it. It wasn't that bad.
Some people, I have, the only people I've heard who watched it so far have liked it. But I haven't heard that many people
who watched
it. I can
totally imagine a person liking it. It's just not our kind of thing. But it, like I said, we didn't stop watching it for the reasons the ads would make us think we'd stop watching it. And the acting was, you know, that's part of it. The acting was actually very good. There was,
and that can do a lot for me.
And the representation was strong, which was nice. We stopped watching it because the plots weren't that compelling to us. Again, it's not our kind of thing. But, you know, other people, I can see someone else. But why are the ads so focused toward a group of people who just based on how the content of the ads, it seems like that group of people, they don't care about anything but sex scenes and melodrama. Like they're not going to care about, you know, anything else. Like there's some pretty interesting themes in a lot of these shows, and some good acting and so on and so forth. The ads don't seem to be targeting people who would appreciate that side of the show. Mm-hmm.
Do you genuinely not know why the advertisers would do that?
Yes, I do genuinely.
Okay,
genuinely not
then know. I'll explain it to you. Because they have determined, through whatever data sources and research they have, that the things that are going to grab the most eyeballs are sex and drama.
But those things make me not want to watch.
Yes, and you are in the minority for a variety of reasons, demographically speaking.
But I'm the kind of person that if I was enticed to watch, I would keep watching, just like we have. We've ignored the ads and just watched it and realized, oh, this is happening.
Absolutely. They have determined that there are like six guys who will watch it for sex and drama.
Okay, well.
I mean, it's like actuarial tables in insurance. I mean, you understand the concept, right? They're like the maximum eyeball for ad sources we have are sex, drama,
but I would think
probably gets way more granular, in
fact. I
would
think the people that go to these shows after an ad like that and watch it are going to be a little disappointed because, yes, well, every once in a while you've got some scene like that. It's not very much. I mean, you know what I'm saying? The show isn't really about that. So are these viewers coming and they're just waiting maybe every other show to get their little flash of skin or whatever it is they like to see and they keep watching based on that?
I don't know. Or maybe they actually see something good and they end up liking it.
Oh, well, I...
Because there are some people who... Well, I suffer from this with a lot of other... when I watch my crappy movies, my crappy horror movies and stuff, I frequently get pulled in by, you know, descriptive text and things, and it sounds like it's going to be a certain thing, and I'll watch it very, very often. I'm like, wow, that was not the movie I expected. Which sometimes is like, God damn it, that was not what I asked for. And other times it's like, wow, that actually ended up being really cool. Case in point, although this is a bad example because it's still pretty shitty, but I'm glad I saw it because it was fascinating to see. Saw a movie yesterday when I was home sick. It's called The Garden of Hedon. Hedon. And the whole thing is very much clearly set up to be like a dark skin flick kind of thing, because it's, you know, it's someplace where anything you want can come true. And that's the whole thing. And the picture up front is extremely suggestive. So I went into this with certain expectations. Those expectations were totally not met. Not that movie. It's a fascinating thing, though. Somebody put together... It's very Matrix-y in a lot of ways. I mean, it borrows from themes of a lot of other things. But it's basically, cop wakes up in a house. He doesn't know how he got there. There's a dead body. And it turns out the house is some supernatural place where you come to and you can't leave. And everybody has made a bargain to get there, but their memory of it is wiped. And it's a place where everybody's just hedonistic. Whatever you want, you can have. And so there's sex going on, there's gambling, there's drugs, there's all sorts of stuff like this. And the thing is, he's there, and what he wants to do is solve this murder mystery, which shouldn't be possible, because it's a house where everybody, like, nobody should be able to get killed. And nobody knows why he's there. And so it becomes this weird, why did the detective bargain to have himself brought into the house just to solve a mystery about a place he didn't, all that kind of stuff. It gets pretty, like, convoluted and interesting concept. Problem being, it was done with zero resources. And I mean this in a variety of ways. First of all, money-wise. It's clearly filmed in one person's house, and it's a good-sized house. It does not scream super rich to me or anything. It still has lots of arbitrary decorations, some of them kind of kitschy, that they just left there. In the gambling den, they clearly took gray tarps or possibly trash bags and, like, hung them up so it would just be, like, a blank background. It's all shot on cheap video, that kind of thing. But beyond that, the level of acting talent they got, the writing's atrocious. And, like, our hero is... He looks like a knockoff, like, not nearly as handsome, but sort of Clint Eastwood at the very tail end of Dirty Harry. So he's not really heroic looking or anything. And we're... Yeah, that's weird. And it's... And to be completely honest, although what I've quickly discovered is the mythology of anything you want, you can have is really nebulous. Because my first thought was, if anything you want, you could have, no one would look like they do. Because these are not A-level TV attractive people either. Like, it was a lot of, like the orgies... Which were just sort of, like it's also really not explicit. There's a tiny bit of nudity, but that's it. It's, like, nobody... Clearly, they hired a couple people to be topless in crowd scenes, and that's it. But, like, the orgy going on looks disturbingly close to what I imagine a real-life, like, people just, like, met on Craigslist orgy would look like. It's just awkward, and everybody looks like they're trying really hard to prove that they are happy, and nobody really looks good, and they're all dolled up in ways that make it even worse, sort of, and yeah. Like, it's just such this weird thing, because it's, and I think I ended up rating it 3 stars, meaning I actually liked it okay, just because I'm like, God damn it, you tried. This was not, you didn't half-ass this, you just literally... had nothing, but you tried your darndest.
Gotta admire that.
Exactly. And putting something new out there,
sure,
you know?
Sure.
This could have been a step away from that plus one that I saw that one time where everybody, a clone of themselves, shows up a half hour earlier. Right. I think I talked about, because that one was fascinating and had just good enough production values to make it work. And that one was very cool. And that's the same thing. Like, with the right resources, this could have been a great movie. It did not have any of those resources. Yeah, it was weird.
What else did you do this week?
Not a lot. I've been sleeping a lot. I haven't been doing too well. The producer's not doing too well at night. She's worried she's coming down with something. I shattered my novel writing illusions. So, I've been operating a while on a very conscious premise of ignoring the reality of becoming a successful writer. Mm-hmm. And just say, you know, I'm going to be the next J.K. Rowling. Mm-hmm. And I've started, you know, run with that. But fully aware that I was ignoring huge swaths of complexity. Mm-hmm. But I feel like deep down, the fantasy was, yes, there's all these hurdles to jump, but I'm just going to be that good and write such an awesome book that, you know, it'll have to get out there and all this. Or it'll quickly be, we'll find out that isn't true and I'm not that good, and then I'll just be done with it, whatever. I think this was sort of what was going on. I don't know. I was really ignoring it. But I found myself the other day, I'm like, I should start looking. So I start looking into just basically how do you get stuff published. And it's interesting, you know, the self-publishing way and what that entails and traditional publishing and all that, and looked at it. And I came to many realizations.
Okay.
But the biggest one can probably be summed up this way. Via the model of publishing that I think has the most chance of success for me, if I wrote the most amazing novel that had been written in decades, and everything else fell into place, it could still be minimum 2 to 3 years before I actually got a thing, like, published.
Sure, yeah.
After it's done. After I've... Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's 100% base case scenario so many levels.
That's right. That's
so, just the realization that... Because part of what was making this work is I wasn't putting any pressure on myself. I wasn't giving myself any deadlines. I wasn't making myself write except when I felt like it. Blah, blah, blah. Because I knew I wouldn't stick to it, you know, that way. I was trying to play to my strengths. And I was the whole idea was trying to play to my strength that I think I have in story writing.
Sure.
But now I've just realized that can't hold. I'm going to have to develop some sense of discipline with this. Or else, if I want to actually try and become a writer for a living.
Oh, because you feel like you're having to take into account the time it's going to take.
Well, I'm just going to have to...
agent.
And really, I need to speed up my discipline on just the writing. I need to get more into... Well, and like right now, the next step is notating my copy with all of its issues, which you'll note is the exact same step it was a week ago. I haven't even started. But on top of that, after this whole thing, what I'm probably going to do before I even begin that now is there's actually a novel I purchased on writing novels that was recommended to somebody who knows that kind of stuff. And I'm probably going to read that next. So this becomes a whole thing. I'm looking at going to writers' conventions. I'm looking... Trish, because she is brilliant when the rest of us are not paying attention to the obvious, she gets there first. It sounded insulting, but in this case, it was a good thing. She's like, you know, we're in Iowa City. They have this thing called the Iowa Writers Workshop.
That's right.
I was like, oh, yeah. Internationally recognized form, you know. I'm not re-enrolling in school or anything like that, but she found, like, they have a summer program that you can do, and so I might look into that. But, yeah, I'm looking into more specific things on story craft and that kind of stuff. And I'm going to have to start not doing it just when I feel like it, or I probably won't get to the rewrite for months. You know, I need to...
So somehow this process of seeing how this would work to actually, as you were saying, make a living doing this, that you... It's something about that inspired you to take the whole thing more seriously? Or?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, like I said, it shattered my illusions, but it also... Because I could see sort of nuts and bolts of what's involved, showed me that it's possible.
Oh, I see. Okay, good. Sure.
I guess I didn't realize that until just now, but I think that's what... Is that... I could... I mean, I definitely... could earn money as an author.
Sure.
But I could potentially make a living at it.
Sure you could. Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I hadn't realized that you hadn't realized that.
Well, I think it... I thought it was one way or the other. I was like, either I'm going to write something amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Or it'll be really obvious that I've got it or I haven't got it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know... Either I've now been convinced that you don't have to have it, you can just get there, or apparently writing what I've written so far, I've determined I have it. I don't know. It's me, so it's possible. There's a delivery guy about to come to the door, so.
Well, he probably isn't very happy.
He did seem to walk a ways. He got a good tip from me, though, so he should be happy about that. Thank you. All right. Let me set that down there. Don't let any cats eat it. Not too much else. We gamed again, but we mostly were just shopping. I got myself a great sword. I turned in my glaive, and now I've got a great sword.
Okay.
I've named it Dave. We're probably going to kill a dragon next game.
Dragon, wow.
We have to deal with a dragon. Killing seems the most likely course, because this is an evil dragon.
Hmm. That will be an interesting encounter, I'm sure.
Theoretically.
I mean, it, you know, dragons. It's a pretty cliche thing to face in a...
In Dungeons & Dragons?
In really any kind of...
We've already gone up against a dungeon and won. They're very slow. You can catch them.
I mean, you know, battles against dragons are pretty old stories. They go back pretty much to the first story when you think about it. If you count Tiamat as a dragon, some of the first stories ever written were versus a dragon.
And yet,
it's a great story.
It wasn't even our fault. Stupid druid. That's his deal.
Everybody looks forward to a good dragon slaying story. I don't know why.
We go to Thunder Tree. I think it's called Thunder Tree. I keep wanting to call it Thunder Bluff from World of Warcraft. And we keep making Thunderdome jokes all over the place. But I think it's called Thunder Tree. And we go there to find this druid, because this druid supposedly knows where Castle Kragmar is, which is where we're supposed to be going. And we don't know where it is. And we go to talk to him, and he's a pain in the ass. Keeps telling us how stupid we are. But eventually says that he will help us out if we take care of the dragon. Because the dragon is screwing up the natural order things in the area. And he's living in the tower. And it's an adolescent green dragon. In D&D, your greens, your reds, your blues, your blacks, all evil, like metaphysically evil. So, which is good for me, because if it's evil, I can totally kill it, and it's righteous.
Righteous.
So, I probably wouldn't use that term, but... I mean, Gronk probably wouldn't use that term. Did I tell you his name's Gronk? My character's named Gronk. No, you don't get any of that. Eddie, you get no! No curry for kitties.
No.
But yeah, that's pretty much it. So, do you want to hat something?
Sure, but you're going to have to hand it to me.
I've got the Eddie.
He doesn't like that.
Nope. Because he wants to eat this.
Blood Sparrow wants to know.
What does Blood Sparrow want to know?
How do you deal with anxiety and awkwardness when you haven't talked to friends for a while?
Oh. This is interesting, given the source.
Yeah, I have.
Is she trying to say she hasn't talked to us in a while and she feels it's awkward?
I don't know.
Well,
if that's the case, then... let me just assure you, Bud Sparrow, there's no need for any anxiety or awkwardness at all.
William is perfectly accepting of your return, and I personally never liked you.
We can just pick up where we left off, no big deal.
Pretty much the same.
But, as a general question, I guess it depends. If you're walking into a situation and the awkwardness is in part due to how the other person's behaving, like they're indicating that they don't know quite, you know.
Mm-hmm. First, check if you're in the correct room.
I mean, if the person you're seeing for the first time after a long time isn't acting weird about it, then to me that takes care of itself. Like, if they're not acting weird, you don't have to act weird. Done.
Can I anyway, though?
But if there is some like weirdness there, like the other person's acting a little weird, that's interesting. I guess for me, when things like that happen, to begin with, no matter how awkward this person seems to be feeling, I probably don't. So
well, but this is the thing. By weird, do you mean they are acting as though this experience is making them uncomfortable? Or if by weird, do you mean out of the ordinary? Because it's one thing where if I seem nervous seeing you or whatever. There's another, I'm totally cool, but meanwhile, I'm not wearing any pants.
No. Like, let's say you and I haven't seen each other for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, I run into this quite often, unfortunately. I'll see someone I haven't seen for a while, and the interaction's not natural. You know what I mean? They're acting a little bit like I'm a stranger when I'm not. You know, I have known each other for a long time, and so it's strange because I'm pretty much always willing to pick up wherever we left. It doesn't matter. 20 years ago, we're just going to start like it was 20 years ago. As far as I'm concerned, don't care. But a lot of other people aren't like that, and you can tell they're not like that by the way they respond to you.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I pretty much just do what I do. I mean, you know, I don't know how to do anything else. So I'll tune it down a little bit to maybe make them feel a little more comfortable. Like I won't ask them questions that are really personal, or I'll stop sharing things about me that are personal that would have been no big deal if I shared them, you know, 20 years ago. But now suddenly it's too much information for some reason. And imagine that for a second. I mean, there's lots of things I won't talk about, so it's hard to imagine what I can talk about that would be too much information. But like, stuff that you wouldn't say to a perfect stranger.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But this person isn't a perfect stranger, so whatever. So I'll tune it down and see if that helps. But honestly, I've basically got two kinds of experiences. I run into someone I haven't seen for a while, and the interaction goes great, or it goes terrible. And that there's nothing in between. It never starts terrible and gets better.
Okay, let's do this here. You run into somebody. They're cool. Like, they're fine. They're totally comfortable. They remember you. They love you. But there's something about them now that is visually or obviously drastically different in a way that is particularly disturbing to you. The no pants was the easy answer, but that's not true. But, like, they take off their jacket or whatever, and they have like a super racist or neo-Nazi shirt on underneath or something like that. But I feel like that's still like politically charged. But you get the idea. Just something that you're like, this is clearly not the same person, and I probably wouldn't have been friends with this version kind of thing. Because that's the thing that's been getting to me lately, is tension in old relationships. I'm very much, sadly, an out-of-sight, out-of-mind person. I don't mean to be, but if we were really close, and then I don't see you for a really long time, we're not very close when I come back. And sometimes I just don't even bother, kind of thing. But I've been thinking about this a lot, and thinking about the fact that, like, people I grew up with, I am now old enough that I have spent as many years, and in some cases more, living completely separate from them than I did living with them. Even my own family.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's weird to assume the old... It's weird to pick up from where I left off, because neither of us is the person that was there before. But that's a common tactic. I talk about it with Trish's family. When Trish's siblings get together, they start turning into the siblings they were in terms of relation to each other. But that doesn't make sense. To me personally, it's very disingenuous. But on the other hand, if we are just who we are now, those people won't necessarily get along as well.
Okay, but I the thing about all of that is, my regard for a person when I knew them has almost nothing to do with what kind of person they were or what kind of person I was. Again, and the family is a very good example. My relationship with my family is, I mean, it has almost no relation to what my siblings are like or what I'm like. I mean, we're family, you know, that's something that we are, and that's something that connects us in a deep way, that nothing about how much we change over time is going to change that. And a lot of the friends that I meet, and like I say, we can pick up, like, you know, like the 20 years didn't even go by. It's not because we're not different people. We're very different people. But the way we feel about each other hasn't changed. Because the way we feel about each other wasn't really based around our identities as people. It was just, it was about a deep connection we shared as human beings. And we're still human beings. So that connection is still there 20 years later. It doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't change. I mean,
wow, I feel so different. I don't even know where to start explaining how different.
Well, I mean,
I feel like the opposite of that. In my relationships, the bulk of my relationships, well, yours and my relationship is entirely based on the person you are and the person I am, and as the years go by, that will not change. Now, there is a subset of, and this is of course true with my family, I love my family, I will always love my family, no matter how different we get. I will always have a certain amount of loyalty to my family and support given to my family. And we will always have things we can talk about via reminiscing and so forth. But, in person, my relationship with any other living being is almost entirely made up of social interaction. And my social interactions with everybody are almost entirely based on the kind of person I am and the kind of person they are.
Well, I can't dispute that, but I mean, yes, if I run into someone 20 years later, we're going to interact differently and in different ways, but I must not be explaining myself very well, because there's just some quality there that allows us...
When I go home...
speak as easily with one another as we used to. We're going to be different, of course, we're going to speak differently, but... There's not going to be any sense of awkwardness or alienation there at all. I mean, that happens a lot. In a lot of the times, I see a friend I haven't seen in years, but sometimes it's not that way. Also, but
when I go home to see my family, there's a lot of anxiety and there's a lot of awkwardness, and a lot of it has to do with they've been living a life for decades. I haven't been there. I try and talk to my mom. My mom does not handle conflict resolution. She handles it the way that she taught me to handle it. Since then, my way of handling conflict resolution has changed. And so we will be talking about something, and one of us will disagree with the other, and the other one will get defensive about it. And the problem is it's me trying to act like myself while still holding a bunch of psychological issues because this is the woman who raised me. But I mean, I get it with friends too. There's underlying ideas that, wow, you're not the same person, or wow, I've really moved on past things and you haven't. And so, I mean, they're always complicated. I always have to at least relearn the methods of communication.
I wonder, though, I mean, in your life, you've gone through so many different phases of so many different things. I mean, like, fairly recently, you've come to terms with being an atheist.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a fairly recent thing.
But even being an atheist is fairly recent as well.
And yet, that's a huge deal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, my spiritual practices and outlooks have... they've evolved in a very different way. A lot of the foundations of what I believe and how I behave have been there for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, most of the changes I've made over the last few decades has been kind of a sort of moving away from a certain equilibrium that I started out with, and then kind of going back to it. And I've mostly changed in how I talk about my beliefs more than my actual beliefs have changed. Like I've spent several decades sorting out what was kind of always there. So it's complicated, and I'm not explaining it very well. But what I'm saying is that I think if by comparison, I, you know, if your life was like a map and my life was next to it and its map, there's a lot of meandering on mine, but yours is like all over the place. And I think that would make a very different experience for you running into people who you used to know.
But keep in mind, I'm only one half of the thing, as are you. Let's try this one. Think about somebody, and you do not need to, and in fact probably should not discuss any details, but think about anyone in your past. I don't want to say that's an enemy at this point, but that when you haven't talked to them in a long time, and when your relationship was there last, it was very bad, and you would probably not want to see them, and if you did, it would be bad, because things just are not good. I've got a lot of people like that in my past.
I mean, there's one person who...
There's nobody out there who you're like, you know what, that was so nasty, if I ever see them again, that's cool.
There's one person that I have no interest in seeing, but not because of anything that was bad in our relationship. It's how they treated some other people.
Okay.
So I'm not sure that counts.
Well, so if they showed up and interacted with you...
I wouldn't interact with them. And that's, you know, that's a big thing for me, because until that person, and that's very recent in my life, actually... Mm-hmm. There was nobody like that.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, but let's use this. Could be a teachable moment here. So let's take that. Let's fast forward 2 decades.
Okay.
Let's say, for whatever thing, maybe it's through third parties or whatever, somebody gets a hold of you regarding this person. This person has changed dramatically. This person has grown. This person is feels extremely bad about a lot of things, including potentially the specific things
that
you're upset about,
sure.
But lots of other stuff in general, and just has changed, has gone through. I mean, I've done it. A very different person on the other side.
Yeah.
First of all, would you be amenable if they said they just wanted to meet and talk with you?
Well, for me to get to the place I am with this person now, and this is, like I said, this is within time period of this podcast that this has happened, that I've come to this kind of feelings about this person, and I never thought I'd feel this way about anybody in my life. For me to get to that place, I have to be pretty done, you know, pretty thoroughly done.
So you're saying no?
I'll say this. If, even though that's how I feel pretty done with this person, and your question, I don't know how to answer it, because it seems like I don't know the answer. But I'm thinking of a different scenario in my head that I feel like I do know the answer that might satisfy your question. If any time in the future, tomorrow, I found out this person was on their deathbed and they wanted me to come see them, I would go see them.
I don't know if that works, because I feel like a deathbed meeting is always kind of awkward, because somebody's going to die. No, but what I'm trying to get at is...
That's not awkward to me.
Of course not.
What? You don't think that's meaningful, that I would do whatever it took to go see this
No,
person?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There are so many people I would do that for. I feel like bullshit to claim, but it wouldn't be awkward.
No. Listen, maybe it. I wouldn't be going because they're dying. I'd be going because they asked me to come. I mean,
So if they asked you to come any other time, you wouldn't be going, has nothing to do with the fact that they're not dying. I mean, I don't... What's the significance of the deathbed, then?
I mean, I know what you're saying. It's like, who wouldn't go to the deathbed if someone asked
for
them?
No, you're not listening to me.
Okay.
I am saying, I absolutely believe you would do that. I absolutely think it's the right thing to do. It makes sense. It makes sense for you. What I'm saying is and I'm going to go out here, the comparatively non-controversial, almost throwaway statement that literally any social interaction between people who haven't seen each other for a while and then get together just as one is about to die is going to be awkward in some capacity by the very nature of the planes of existence and the situation. And I feel like literally anyone else in the world would be like, yeah, that makes sense. Because it's just awkward. Haven't seen you in a while. You're about to die. That's awkward. It's mostly awkward with somebody I see regularly if they're about to die. But what bugs me is that it is such a simple, uncomplicated statement that was a throwaway, almost just a little joke on my part, and now that's the focus of our conversation.
What's the focus of our conversation?
That you're trying to explain yourself when I said no. It definitely would still be awkward to meet with somebody on their deathbed. Because the whole idea here was the awkwardness of meeting somebody you haven't seen for a while.
Yeah, but I guess I don't think it would be. Awkward's just not the word I would use.
Oh my God. And that's on you. I mean, that's when you get down into the rabbit hole of semantics and your specific definitions of stuff. Like, this is a point where I don't know what to say to you because we're clearly just using different language.
Well, maybe.
To me, it is such a self-manifest concept that if you didn't see somebody for a while and you showed up just before they died, that might be an awkward conversation.
If they asked for you to be there, what's awkward about it?
It's just weird to be like, hey, how's it going? Just the very nature of this is literally the last conversation you can ever have with me, and so what the hell do we talk about? We should talk about the serious stuff, but that's too serious, so maybe we'll just talk about the light stuff. Literally what I'm doing right now is personifying awkwardness.
Yeah, and I, like, the stuff you just said, I wouldn't go through my head, I don't think.
And what would you talk about then?
And I feel like I know that because I've kind of been in that situation, but not with someone I haven't seen for 20 years.
So you've got a set thing you talk about on deathbeds?
Again, I guess I'm thinking if they ask for me to be there, they have something they want to talk about, so I wouldn't have to worry about what to talk about. I guess. I don't know. That's just what I'm thinking. I don't know. I'm just telling you what I'm thinking.
Weirdly... When you simplify the complex things in the world, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. It's when you take the simplest things and complexify the conversation to such a degree.
Have I complexified it?
Yes, because the last 10 minutes is literally because you couldn't agree with what I think is one of the least confusing and most agreed on sentences in existence.
I'm not disagreeing with it in principle. I'm saying that I don't think that I would feel that way. That's just my personal opinion about me imagining myself in that hypothetical situation. I don't know how it would be for any... I mean, you say it would be awkward for you, I believe you. You say it would be awkward for everybody else on the planet, I believe you. I don't have any reason to suspect it would be...
I guess it just feels like, because again, it was a side comment, it feels like I'm creating a hypothetical here where I'm describing you as a big league baseball pitcher. And it's not you, it's anybody. But I'm using it in second person. And when I talk about you getting up there and you don't chew tobacco anymore, you just have a big thing, a grape big league chew in between cheek and gum. It seems like you're stopping to say, actually, if it was me, I'd have original flavor. Which I'm like, first of all, no, what I said was grape. And second of all, I don't know. Like I said, it's just, there are sometimes...
I thought we were talking about me because I brought that particular scene.
No, we were talking about you, but that's... it was just a joke about how anytime you're going to be at somebody's deathbed, it's awkward. And to me, it felt like the simplest thing in the world. And there are so few things that you and I can just talk about, and it's simple. And so I guess... I freaked out a little bit because I was like, this little thing. And then it became... Actually, it wouldn't be true for me. I joke about you being not human. And I feel like it's a little bit mean sometimes because I feel like it bothers you. But then there are times where I'm like, you say real life stuff that seems too mean for me to have joked about. You're constantly having to say, oh no, I'm not like that. Or I'm like, even on stuff that I'm like, really? Come on. You wouldn't have any sort of like, I wonder how this is going to go. What are we going to do? You'd just be like, clearly there's a clear message I'm supposed to get, so I'm going to go and receive them. I mean, it feels very weird.
Okay. I mean, I don't know what to tell you.
Do you think
I'm not being honest?
Or? No. Okay. I never think you are not being honest consciously.
Okay.
The belief that you have ideas about yourself and your reactions and what kind of person you are and what you believe that are technically not true, but you have convinced yourself, that possibility always exists in my mind. Both because I think anybody is capable of that kind of self-deluding. I know I must have tons of it. But also just because you're such an outlier in everything. And I just don't know what to do with it. I'm like, really? Are you just that big of a statistical anomaly?
See, I'm not sure that... I mean, I've read articles from people. I've read things that people have talked about with similar experiences, you know, where someone asked them to be with them when they passed away, and they talked about the experience, and they didn't mention it being awkward, even if they hadn't seen the person for a long time. I don't think it's unusual at all. I mean, when I say it, I feel like I'm expressing something that lots of other people have expressed in certain contexts and things.
Yes, and I'm not saying you're deluding yourself in this instance. I am putting out a blanket statement. I will never believe that you are lying to me, but I always leave open the possibility that you're lying to you.
Yeah, that's always possible.
But in this instance, it does seem like a weird one. This is my problem. It's not yours. This is my weirdness. I just...
But to your original question, I mean, I feel like for most people, I always leave open the possibility because I would want them to do that for me. In relation to this person I was talking about, I don't trust them. You know, 20 years down the road, if they tell me or someone else tells me that this has happened, why should I believe that it's happened? Because I...
Well, and I mean, this speaks to it, because my point was going to be, if over time you can take a non-functional relationship and go back to a functional relationship, then you have to acknowledge the possibility of the opposite happening, which means theoretically you could see somebody you haven't seen for ages and they have essentially turned into a person that you would want nothing to do with.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. I mean, like the example you used earlier, someone has a bunch of swastikas and stuff tattooed all over them. I've never experienced anything close to that, and I don't know what it would be like if I did. I've met people who you know, they looked like they've been through some pretty rough things, and I did my usual thing, just start talking to them like I just saw him yesterday and everything's fine. And sometimes these people will open up and say, yeah, this happened and this happened, terrible, terrible things that happened that they did, but nothing that would make me like write them off or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But to me, having, you know, being a white supremacist or something is in a whole different class, and I've just never had to deal with anything quite like that.
And we've strayed a bit to the point to the quite when I don't know why I'm suddenly having issues with us straying, but the question was how you deal with the anxiety, and your answer seemed to largely start with, I never feel any in these situations, and so it is based entirely on the other person. If they feel some, then we have to deal with that. If they don't, then there just isn't any. And that's this rabbit hole was based on that concept.
Most of the time, that's the case.
I
do feel uncomfortable in a lot of situations. However, I feel social anxiety generally, so I don't know if I can tell the difference between just the general social anxiety I feel in being in a situation because it's a social situation, you know, or, oh, I'm going to be meeting. Like, I went to my class 25th anniversary class reunion. I hadn't been to any of them before that. I'm trying to remember. I know I felt some anxiety about that, but, you know, I always feel anxiety about things like that. Doesn't matter if I know the people or haven't, you know. So I don't know how much of that was just that, or if any of it was, gosh, what am I going to talk to these people about or whatever.
Well, and usually with that kind of stuff, there's a myriad of thing. I mean, in general, yes, one suffers social anxiety because one always does, but in the moment, the anxiety is frequently about something, and it could be anything, you know, what am I wearing, what's the situation,
yeah.
Have I got bad breath,
sure,
last time I saw them, I said this terrible joke, or whatever. And so it's entirely possible that, and I haven't seen them in 30 years, I don't even know what kind of person they are anymore thing, could be one of those
yeah,
things.
Yeah, and I didn't sort that out at all, you know, I just...
How in general do you deal with the anxiety of seeing people?
You just go see them, I mean...
Just suck it up.
Yeah.
I think that's a good answer.
But I mean, that's what an introvert does, because that's all an introvert can do. You can't deal with it, you just... go.
Well, or you run. Sometimes people run.
No,
sometimes people lash out.
Yeah,
there are other things that introverts do. They're not necessarily good things.
No, I mean, don't get me wrong. I stay home a lot because that's just what I want to do. And I finally tell myself, if you don't want to do this, why do it? Just stay home. But there are times where I know that my desire to stay home is too much of a... I don't believe that you should always just go with your natural inclination on things, because I don't think your natural inclination is always right.
No.
And
I get a lot of things that I'm forced to go that if I had my druthers, I would not go, that I really enjoy.
Yeah.
Most things,
right,
actually.
Right,
I don't like going out.
I'm the same way.
But I have a really fun time sometimes doing
exactly.
it.
Exactly. So, and sometimes it's not only is your natural inclination not right, it's absolutely wrong. So you just, I just do it, and as you were kind of implying happens with you, if things work out, and, you know, whatever, and it's fine, and I'm glad I did it, what have you. And like with this 25th anniversary class reunion, again, I know I felt, I mean, I don't remember exactly how I felt, but I must have felt social anxiety, because I always do for such things. I don't remember sorting through that, thinking that there was anything else there but the usual. When I got there, I was comfortable with everybody I talked to. And afterwards, I felt comfortable with how everything went, except that I wished, with these things, I always feel later, I feel bad about, oh, I talked too much about this, or this person asked me about these things, but I didn't ask them, and this person was sitting right next to me, and I didn't talk to them at all. And that was a big thing about my 25th. Class reunion, because there was a person who I was very close friends with in school who was sitting right next to me most of the time, who I didn't talk to at all, because people would walk up and before I knew it, you know, they were gone or something, or I had to leave, and it wasn't until later I realized, oh my gosh, I didn't even talk to her. And then on top of that, several months later she passed away.
Throw
that on the on the flame.
That's why I just cut them loose and never go back.
Well, do you even feel awkward?
We ever die? All the time. And mostly, that's how I handle it, is just suck it up. There are other times where I try and step out and, like, match the significance of the situation. I had one where a friend from college was coming, and she literally was just in time to have lunch and then go, and, like, there was no reason she would ever be anywhere. Like, this was quite possibly the last time we'd ever see each other, whatever. Wow. So I just basically told myself, quite literally, it sort of doesn't matter. Like, how it's, like, if I come off as a jackass or whatever, it's not like we're going to see each other again. Or whatever. Not like I could stab her and it would be fine. No, just in general, like, oh, if I talk too much or I talk too little, who really cares? We're not hanging out anymore. We probably never will again. And that made me more calm. And actually, we had a great time. We had a wonderful time. We went to the Chinese buffet and sat there for like 3 hours. And some of it was reminiscing. A lot of it was new stuff. It was a really good time. But yeah, I relaxed myself by thinking that. And then the other one I do want to say, it's particularly awkward. I feel like calling it out is a good one. You just say, this is weird. I haven't seen you in a while. I mean, I'm glad to see you, but...
Yeah, I think I've tried that before.
We've both changed. I don't know quite how to approach you.
Yeah, I think I've tried that.
It only works on certain type of people, but... And unfortunately, I haven't seen them so long, you don't know if they're that type of person.
Yeah, well, but again, for me, whatever I try, like I said, either there's not a problem at all, or it's a problem that doesn't...
Or they stabbed you.
No, it's just... It's an awkward conversation. we part ways and then we never really see, you know, we don't friend each other on Facebook or any crazy stuff like that. It's either one or the other. It's hardly ever in between.
All right.
I'm not skilled enough to fix it.
Yeah.
Like you probably are.
But I don't. we are out of time and drove up. So, go to the blog where recently we learned that the only social situation that is always awkward that no one can fix is drumming with Jasmine because she is such a drama queen.
That's so funny because she's absolutely not that at all.
Way to kill the joke there, buddy.
But people might not know that that's what makes it funny. Like if they're new.
Yeah, but it's not funny now. Any joke you have to explain. Anyway, go to Facebook and like us because nobody does that anymore, and it makes me sad. Facebook makes me sad. That's a different story.
Sad Facebook.
Yep. Well, I think the episode was going to be called High Anxiety, but now it's clearly going to be called Sad Facebook. Is it Sad Facebook or Sad Facebook or Sad Facebook?
I think it's capital S, Sad Face.
Okay.
Capital B. Well,
so Sad Face is one word.
Yeah, that's
all right. All right. Sad Facebook. For some reason, it reminds me of Batman Day. I don't know why. We have the worst titles.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.